Today is the day when we gather for the recitation of the Patimokkha according to our practice of the Dhamma Vinaya. We come together every 15 days or so for this purpose. And today was also a day when new bhikkhus received Upasampada and joined the Sangha. And they've come to ask Nisaya, take dependence on me as a teacher. Again, this is according to the Dhamma Vinaya that the Lord Buddha left us. He stipulated that once having been ordained, entering the Sangha, new bhikkhus must hold to the Dhamma Vinaya as a way of practice. We have to hold and follow the sila, the way of restraint in the Patimokkha, and have to learn how to be careful and respect our practice of sila. The practice of sila in the Patimokkha is for purity of mind. Once we've received Upasampada, we must practice this in a sincere way with commitment. We must learn how to compose ourselves, restrain our minds and our habits of body, speech and mind. And we must reflect on the fact that the Dhamma Vinaya is that which represents the Lord Buddha now. It helps us, as we practice like this, to reduce the amount of mental confusion, agitation and suffering that we have in our hearts. The practice of sila, when done well, helps us to attain a certain level of happiness. But it requires constant study and it requires us to put effort into the practice of sila to attain this level of happiness. Lumpo Cha emphasized over and over again in his training of the monks at Wat Bopong that sila is the foundation of the practice, and it's something that we can't overlook or do without or get round. Talking about the practice of samadhi, you could say that it's more up to each individual how much effort they put into the practice of meditation, making their mind firm and one-pointed. And similarly, the wisdom that grows out of this and from their training in contemplation for the liberation of the heart from kilesa, this also depends on each individual's personal efforts. But sila is something everyone must follow, everyone must practice. It's indispensable and it's a requirement for every bhikkhu. Even the small rules are important. We have to learn how to be careful, how to be heedful and diligent in our practice. We've received these teachings from Lumpo Cha and other Krubra Ajahns that remind us over and over again to be restrained in our sila. And when we are restrained in sila, this will develop slowly into samadhi. If we talk about sila, then there's the Patimokkha Samvara Sila, restraint in the rules of the Patimokkha. There's also Indriya Samvara Sila, the restraint, sense restraint, learning how to be careful whenever we have sense contact. We have to learn how to be mindful of our ayatana, our sense bases, the internal sense bases and the external sense bases, the contact we have with the world. Say, when eyes see a form, we have to have mindfulness. We learn how to be careful from moment to moment with all the sense contact, because all the sense contact we have sends information down to the mind. And from that, if we're not careful, this leads on to attraction, aversion, and all kinds of mental proliferation. This is why we have to train in sati, in having mindfulness with sense contact. We have to be careful of what arises with the sense contact. That is sanya, the memory and perceptions based around that sense contact, and the dhamma aramanas, the different mental phenomena that come up with each sense contact. These are what feed nourish our mental proliferation and leads on to all kinds of mental activity and suffering and different moods. So when we have sense restraint, we have mindfulness at sense contact on a continuous level, a continuous way, then samadhi will start to arise. The mind will become more one-pointed and focused. And in turn, punya, insight and wisdom can develop from this. This is essential if we want to uproot the clinging, the attachments we have, if we want to purify our mind. So this is the foundation of training, learning to have restraint in the Patimokkha, sense restraint, learning to be careful in our daily lives, learning to have sense restraints at different times. Say, for instance, our eyes are always at work, looking, seeing things. If we go on Bindabhata, for instance, Lumpur Cha said, be careful if you find yourself looking at a form that is attractive, you know, the form of the opposite sex, and it gives rise to lust. Then you have to learn how to restrain at that point, at that moment, maybe to turn away or to establish mindfulness. You also have to learn how to contemplate, to balance that mental proliferation that might arise with lust. So you have to bring up the asupa reflection to see the unattractive side of that image. When we're walking Bindabhata, we have to do this. When we're eating, come together to eat the meal, and we meet with lay people or interesting food, interesting sights, smells, tastes, and so on, we have to do this. At drink time, we have to do this. On Bindabhata, Lumpur Cha said we have to practice to see ourselves and other people as if corpses. Learn how to see that, see the corpse in people, to see their flesh and bones, to see the anicca, the impermanence of each body that we meet on Bindabhata. We have to learn how to turn our attention inwards. And to do that, you obviously have to learn how to restrain your speech, not to be always chatting, speaking a lot. If you chat a lot, then the mind will tend to wander all over the place. It will be the mind, you'll let your mind go. There'll be many moods and thoughts, and it will be hard to see the Dhamma. You can see that even if you have many monks together, if they're practicing restraint, they're careful in what they do, what they say, then it's as if each monk is living in viveka, in seclusion. We must put effort into the practice. We have to learn how to restrain ourselves, have mindfulness. If we have that, then you can say that we're truly aiming to liberate our minds from the kilesa. When we take nisaya, take dependence on the teacher, it means we have to give up to the teacher. We have to give up to the Dhamma Vinaya. That means we no longer just follow our moods and desires as we used to in the lay life. When we take nisaya and follow the Dhamma Vinaya as our way of life, we have to reflect on the fact that we are now monks. Today you have an ordination. You become a monk on the outside. On the conventional level, we put on the robes and shave the head. But the practice is about developing the internal monk, changing our characters, our habits of body, speech and mind. That's the only way that we can turn this conventional reality into an ultimate reality and vimutti, or liberation. We have to develop the true or the pure monk inside of ourselves. So this is partly just an attitude. We have to develop the attitude that we are now one who is in training. We are practicing. If you have that right attitude, then every moment becomes valuable because it's a moment for developing the training. It's a moment to develop mindfulness and clear comprehension. This is the kind of attitude we have to develop very well in our first 5 years as monks. We train in this. And this is what leads to the ending of doubts about the training and the purpose of the training and the meaning of this lifestyle. we really put in the effort to train ourselves in this way, we'll gain a confidence and understanding of the training and its value. And then we can say we'll be established in the training after those 5 years as a Navaka bhikkhu. So please see that the Patimokkha Samvara practice, the Indriya Samvara practice, these are the heart of our training. We also have to reflect on the use of the requisites, how we obtain our requisites. We have to make sure we always obtain them in a pure way, through unsolicited donations from laity, whatever comes our way. We have to learn how to be content with what we have. We can't always be seeking, bothering people, burdening people with our demands and our desires. We can't cheat other people, trying to impress them or gain things in devious or manipulative ways to earn a living as a monk. We have to be straight and honest. If we do this, then this will allow the mind to settle down. We won't have regret, remorse, or agitation in the mind. So the mind will settle down and gather together and unify. This unification will allow wisdom to arise. The Lord Buddha praised monks who learn how to live simply and contented with what they have and living in seclusion. He praised those who aim to train their minds to develop samadhi and do what it needs to do that. He praised those who practice to overcome the nivarana, the five hindrances. We have to see that these hindrances arise all the time. From moment to moment they're coming up. And these are what stimulate the sankhara dhammas, the mental proliferation that we're experiencing from moment to moment in our lives. That proliferation leads on to bhava and jati. It leads on to upadana, attachment, bhava, states of existence, and jati, in further rebirth. We have to see that. We have to understand that process and start to apply sati and sampajanya at that point where mental proliferation is arising. It's sati and sampajanya that allows us to restrain the mind, to put a brake on that process. And this is what brings up a sense of spaciousness, quietness in the mind, and that's where punya can arise, wisdom can arise. So even just contemplating the use of the four requisites is a very vital part of the practice for learning how to train the mind. We learn to obtain our requisites in the correct way, in a pure way, and then we have to contemplate how to use them wisely once we've got them. We have to see that these four requisites that we have, the alms food, the robes, the lodgings, and the medicines for when we're sick, these come through the barami and the virtue of the Lord Buddha. And they're given to us through the kindness and compassion of the laity. We have to remember that's a debt that we have. We're indebted to the Lord Buddha and we're indebted to the laity who support us. The way we repay that debt, say karmically, is through our own efforts in the practice. We have to have that sincerity to keep up our efforts. So we have to learn how to be restrained in the use of the requisites. Say when we eat our alms food, we have to be restrained. We have to see that we have to have a certain dedication to developing mindfulness, learning to train ourselves, so we can't just indulge in sleep and sleep all the time. We have to see that this is a chance, like a golden opportunity to train ourselves and practice, but it's up to us to make use of that opportunity. Today we were given the Panchakamatana, the Kesa Loma Nakadanta Tacho. These are the heart of body contemplation, the way to train the mind in meditation. We use this meditation to help us to reduce and overcome our lustful attraction for the body. Everybody is infatuated with their physical body and the body of others. This is normal for us. We usually see the body as something attractive. We always remember and think about the attractive parts of the physical human body. Just think about it. When you think of skin, you look at skin as something attractive, don't you? We never look beyond skin or inside the skin of a human body. Think about it. If you peel the skin off a body, what do you find? if we're honest, we can say, well, underneath it's pretty much a revolting mess. So learn how to do this mentally, quietly in your reflection. Just learn how to peel the skin off your body. What do you see? Inside it reveals the organs, the flesh, the brain, the bones, the blood, and so on. This is truth. This is reality. Learn how to do this as a skill, how to unpeel your own skin. Take it out, take it off, and then remove each body part one by one. Take them out, put them, spread them around. Imagine if we did peel the skins off each other, off our bodies as we're sitting here. Just the smell would already be unbearable, it would be terrible. Everyone's red flesh would be exposed and we'd all feel sick. Contemplate each part of the body in the same way to see the same truths, whether it's the liver, the kidneys, the heart, the different liquids of the body, the lymph, the blood, the mucus, and so on. Do this in a way, in a very thorough way. Go back and forth, up and down, each part one at a time, until you can really see the truth of this body. The reason we do this is because it brings peace to the mind and stillness. And this stillness comes because we're uprooting our formerly held attachments. Contemplate these 32 parts of the body. And this is what we call Gayagata Sati, mindfulness of body. From this we can move on to the Asupagamatanas, the corpse reflections. For this we learn to visualize and contemplate the body in the state of decomposition, from the time when it dies right through to when it breaks up and disappears back into the elements. Learn how to be skilled in contemplating each stage of the degeneration of the body, how when it dies, how it goes cold and stiff, how it starts to change color, swells up, becomes bloated. See the liquid oozing out of this body. See what happens when insects come and lay their eggs and then worms hatch and start eating the body. What does that do to it? Contemplate the body. See how it breaks up as it degenerates and decomposes. How it splits apart. How gradually the different organs get eaten up till there's only bones left. And even the bones eventually will scatter. As you do this, the result of it is, again, it's this sobering, peaceful state of mind that arises the more clearly we see the asupa in this body. As we sober up, we start to turn away from the world and our formerly held attachments. And so the strength of our lust and our anger is undermined. These moods can't take over the mind so easily or in such a strong way. So learn how to contemplate like this often. Do it regularly, and you'll experience the cool, peaceful states of samadhi more often. Or if you find it more helpful, then you can contemplate Buddha Anusati first. Use Buddho, contemplate the virtues of the Buddha, or use Buddho, the recitation of Buddho. Or if you find Anapanasati convenient, you can do that. And once the mind is peaceful, then go on to do this contemplation of the body and the Asupagamatanas. Either way, the result is that the mind becomes more peaceful. This peace is characterized by the arising of piti, rapture, sukha, this sense of ease and contentment of heart, based on a detached knowing of reality. If we can see the corpse in this body, piti and sukha will arise for sure. The mind will become brighter and more peaceful, and this is the aim of our practice. So this contemplation of the Asupagamatan, as I explained, is a skill that we have to develop. In the beginning, we just use what we have, our memories, our imagination, the creativity of the mind. We bring up images, maybe things, images that we've seen before. We hold them in the mind. And even if they're not yet very clear or we can't hold them in the mind for very long, never mind, just keep trying, keep contemplating in this way, using your sanya and sankhara, This is the way you have to teach yourself. You teach yourself to investigate truth. You can ask yourself questions. What will I look like if I died? After 2 days, 2 days after I died, what will I look like? What will happen to the body? Will it change color? Will it change texture? Will it become wet or dry and so on? Contemplating like this can even make you feel a bit sick sometimes if you're doing it properly. What you're really doing is just observing truth, how the body changes once it becomes a corpse, the kind of natural decomposition, the different things that happen, the worms that come and live in it and start eating it, how the skin breaks open, the flesh disappears and you get down to bones. Even the bones start to change. They lose their white color and go brown, become dusty, and eventually break up, return to the earth, and the whole sense of a body just disappears. We contemplate like this, but it has to be done just through thinking and memory in the beginning. Later, after much practice, much contemplation, much meditation, the mind might gather together and become peaceful and still. But if the mind won't yet settle down, you might have to go back to your original meditation object, say the breath or Buddho, until it has become firm and peaceful. So the practice involves a lot of alternation between making the mind firm and peaceful and then this contemplation of the body and of a supa. But little by little it will give rise to a sense of calm, peaceful, detached awareness and the arising of rapture and joy and sukha, contentment. You must remember though that samadhi alone, all it does is it suppresses the kilesas, keeps them in check. But samadhi alone cannot uproot the kilesa or attachments. For this we need wisdom and insight. We have to train in wisdom. The danger of just practicing samadhi alone is that we can attach to it, we enjoy the pleasant, blissful states, and it can lead to actually increasing our delusions. We can form a sense of self around that experience of samadhi. We can form wrong views. So the way the Khrubrajans advised us to practice is to develop sati at all times, in all postures. And coming out of samadhi, you must maintain your sati, and you have to learn how to contemplate. Contemplate this body. Investigate it. Some monks only want to develop the peaceful states of samadhi so that they can have this sense of peaceful bliss in the mind, and then they just want to contemplate the mind. They completely ignore the body. This way they often even think that they're enlightened already, that they've gone beyond the body. But it's delusion. If one's really training properly, one has to keep coming back to the body. You have to remember the information you might have gathered in the past, say like if you've seen pictures of dead bodies or you've been to an autopsy perhaps, you can bring up those memories and use them creatively to help your mind develop wisdom. And this is supported by the peace of samadhi. Just imagine yourself when you're dead, when you die, when the body is dead, what will it look like? Imagine maybe the blood flowing out of the different orifices. Maybe in the past you've had injuries or different medical problems, physical problems or illnesses where you have pus or blood in the body. And you can bring up those memories again just to remind you what it looks like. Whether you're doing it straight, doing the supa straight, or you're using formally developed meditation objects such as Buddho or Maranānusati or the breath. Once you reach a state of peace and firmness, it's then that the asupa can become very clear and very powerful reflection in the mind. Once the mind becomes peaceful, the mind might throw up an image of yourself as a corpse. And that image might be very, very clear. You might have a sense of an image of the blood flowing down your throat or around your body. and you will see this as clearly as if it was real. That nimitta is just a nimitta, and it might not last for that long. But while you have that experience, the mind is peaceful and it has a very powerful impact on the mind. The important thing is to keep practicing continuously, regularly, contemplating the asupa. If the mind is peaceful from asupa, one can also go on to develop the contemplation of the four elements, to see these clearly in this body, to see the body as the earth element, as the water element, the fire element, and so on. And from this we can get a clear impression of the anatta, the lack of self in this body. Again, thoroughly contemplate back and forwards, breaking down this body into the elements, seeing the elements in the body in the elements, until you get to the point where the sense of a body disappears. This will help us to uproot our attachments and develop clear insight into this body. It will lead to the sense of detachment arising in the mind. It's that sense of detachment which is an indication that we're practicing correctly, and that once you develop that detachment, experience it, you can start to see the path that leads to its arising. Right from the beginning, you can see the value of, say, just how you begin the practice with some faith, satta, in the Krubra Jan and in the teachings you've heard, how that faith leads on to the keeping of the sila, the Patimokkha sila, the Indriya Sangvara sila, sila in the use of the four requisites. You can see how that dedication to the practice, to developing mindfulness, sleeping little, talking little, eating little, all the different component parts, you can see how they're a cause for the mind getting to this point where it's peaceful and can see the truth clearly. You can also see when you let up your efforts in the practice, you become a bit lazy or an indulgent, then the kalesas can still return. As long as they haven't been uprooted, they can just return like weeds in a garden. They come back up and we start to eat more, sleep more, talk more. When you notice that, that's always the sign to redouble your efforts, go back to the beginning, put more effort into the practice. You have to really want to develop samadhi if you're going to do this. If you really want to develop samadhi, well, that's what will give you the impetus, the motivation to go back to the barikama and the investigation. That will give you the motivation to keep the sila, and that sila is essential. It's the foundation for the arising of samadhi. As we're keeping the sila, then we have to put effort into the meditation practice, learning how to walk, meditation, sit meditation. And this is the cause for the arising of samadhi. Samadhi develops from a cause, not just from wanting it. We actually have to create the right causes. It means lots of effort put into barikama pavana, recitation of the meditation word or mindfulness of the meditation object, and learning how to make use of seclusion, quiet times on your own meditating. When the mind gathers together for a short period, this is what we call kanika samadhi. Longer periods where there's a distinct lightness of body, lightness of mind, this is upajara samadhi. If you want to experience this deepening levels of samadhi, deepening stages of samadhi, then you have to dedicate yourself to the practice. At night, maybe go to bed at 10 p.m. If you go to bed at 10, maybe get up at 3 a.m. Carry on practicing. So shake yourself off once you've woken up and determine to carry on meditating. That would be a good standard. If you have trouble getting up in the morning, then before you go to sleep, make a clear determination in your mind that when you wake up, you'll arise and carry on practicing. That's the way to do it. If you really want to develop samadhi, you have to keep determining and redetermining the mind to practice. That's the way that you can learn to transcend the five hindrances. If you don't make any efforts in this, then the mind remains the mind of a layperson. How are lay people? How do they live? Well, they tend to be just following the five hindrances all the time. The five hindrances are in charge of the mind. So we must keep reminding ourselves, seeing the danger of this, see the danger of samsara, the endless round of rebirth, and see that this practice is the way out of that. We have to bring up a state of carefulness, diligence, so that we can find the way out of samsara. It's the opposite of the way of indulgence, where we just indulge in food and requisites. Once we have faith and confidence in the practice, then we have to put in this effort. It's only through the practice that our confidence can increase and we can get beyond doubts. When you reach the point where the doubts are dispelled, then the practice is almost automatic, you might say. We don't have to think about it or try very hard. We know we have to practice, and that's what we're doing. We do meditate, we do practice. It's at that point that we develop a firm belief in the efficacy of the practice. We have a confidence, we know it's something good, we know the purpose of it, and we know it's the thing that we have to do. It's at that point that we'll develop some of this detached knowing. It's free from our moods and desires of liking and disliking. That's the direction we have to take if we want to transcend the world. If we really want to find the Buddha and see the Buddha, we have to go that way. If we keep practicing like this, it will lead to the arising of samadhi. And it's that samadhi that will allow us to hold the mind in one place long enough to contemplate, to develop wisdom, to see a supa without distraction, without getting caught up in things. With that samadhi, the piti and the sukha that comes will allow the investigation to deepen. We can deepen the investigation from the asupa going on to the four elements and gradually become clear. The perception of anatta will become clearer and clearer in the mind. We'll have greater confidence in the practice, greater confidence in our own state of mind that's arising from the practice. Eventually reaching a point where the mind is as if floating, free from its attachment and kilesa. That's the point where we see the body in the body, or the body as the body. In the beginning, the sense of peace arises mainly from the samatha practice, just learning to one point the mind, free it from the hindrances. But in quite a natural way, if we keep contemplating, then this changes into vipassana, seeing anicca, dukkha, anatta in this body. The mind will come to the point where it knows the truth. All these practices begin as samatha, kayagata, sati, maranānusati, and so on. They're samatha practices, learning to just one point the mind. But they're all the basis for the mind to move on into insight. Once samadhi is established, the mind is firm. This is what allows insight to develop, because it gives the mind the space and the clarity to see truth. Seeing truth means seeing the body as just the body, without a sense of ownership or attachment. If samadhi has not yet arisen, then you have to keep going back to the basics. Keep your sila, practice the core what, keep bringing up mindfulness in your daily life, and little by little the mind will gather together and become firmer and more peaceful. We have to be able to expect that sometimes our teachers will make us do things that go against our desires. Or the Vinaya itself, the Dhamma, the Vinaya, the core what, will make us go against our desires. And we have to endure that. We have to be ready to be patient with that. But it's the way that will lead us to see the truth. The only way you can see truth is if you get beyond your own moods and desires and learn to let them go. So now we are here, and in the training, we must try our best. We must try our best to follow the core what, the ways of practice in the monastery, and we must try our best to bring up effort to make our body, speech and mind beautiful in the Dhamma. We have to put effort into developing metta, kindness, as we live in a community. We have to learn how to think of each other with a heart of metta, whether we're together or single, whether we're talking about someone who's with us or behind their backs, we have to have a heart of metta. And we have to learn how to use our time wisely to develop the practice. That's what it means when we talk about bhavana. It's developing the practice in a wise way. This is what will lead to the arising of samadhi. This is what will lead to the arising of insight. We are now close to the Vasa time now, so it's a good time to determine to use your time for the practice. Over the next few weeks, try to tie up all your business and loose ends so that you can dedicate yourself to the practice and put all your effort into it. Put all your efforts into keeping investigating the Asupa Gamatana and the four elements. It's from this that we gain that spaciousness of mind where it's free in a state of liberation. Especially whenever you're traveling or in a group where you're in the public, where there's a lot of people around, be careful not to let your mind go. Don't let it just roam freely because it become under the rule of the defilements. When you're in public, it's very easy to throw out mindfulness. So you have to learn how to restrain yourself, whether you're on your own or in public. But also find how to do this in a balanced way. How to be able to practice in all situations and to bring up all the different aspects of the practice together to have a balanced state of mind. If you keep bringing up the different factors of the practice, keep putting into effort in, then sooner or later you'll experience the mind gathering together in samadhi. Sometimes it might be just once in many days, sometimes every few days, maybe even just once a day. But let this happen according to causes and conditions. If it has gathered together in samadhi, we'll appreciate that and make use of it, but don't try and force it or hold on to it. If it's gathered yesterday, then don't try and force it today. If it's not working yet, just keep returning to the causes for good practice. Keep going back to developing mindfulness, bringing up the faith and keeping the core what. Now that you are here and you have the faith to practice for Margapala Nibbana, then see that's something that's very important. Keep that goal in mind. It's not something that's out of date, like some people say. Lumpur Cha always used to remind us that there's water in the earth. If you try hard enough, you dig deep enough, sooner or later you'll dig downwards and you'll reach water. Nibbana is like that. It's there waiting for us. It's just a matter of us putting in the effort to get down to it or get to it. If we keep developing sati and sampajanya, we keep returning to the asupa contemplations, we keep contemplating anicca dukkha anatta in our experience, this will bring us to see emptiness and experience emptiness. This will bring us to loosen our attachment and our infatuation with this body. The more we loosen our attachment to this body, then the more we loosen our attachment for the world around us at the same time. The more we experience the mind in samadhi, then the more we'll be able to experience the mind that can develop wisdom, develop insight. We'll get to the point where we can see that all rupa dhamma are the same. They're all subject to anicca, dukkha, anatta. They're all ownerless. They don't have a self, or they're free from self. The more we practice, the more we will understand this, and we'll understand the true way of things. We'll understand the way that leads to Nibbana, to understanding reality or truth. We'll see that the Dhamma is the highest, it's the most precious, the most valuable thing. And the more we practice this way and understand this, then the more we'll be ready to give up to the Dhamma and give away the worldly Dhammas. We won't be seeking them anymore. Lumpur Cha would teach all the new monks that body contemplation and the asupa practices are vital for the development of the mind. He'd teach the monks to see asupa because this is the way we can be peaceful and happy within ourselves. This is what frees the mind from its enemies, the kilesa. When we're caught into sensuality, it just leads to suffering, just leads to wrong view when we see that as the way to happiness. When we have wrong view, then we see the body as attractive. We see that body as a source of happiness. We see it as a self. We see it as something permanent. The thing that changes our wrong views or eradicates them is insight into the true nature of reality. Insight allows us to let go. It brings our view in line with truth. It brings our view to normality. It allows the mind to let go of desires and attachments. To do this, you have to be thorough. You have to learn how to contemplate backwards and forwards seeing this body for the way it is, contemplating the 32 parts of this body, and go through them one by one. The hair of the head, the nails, the teeth, the bones, the blood. Just ask yourself with each part, is it good looking? Is it attractive? Is it worth holding on to? If you don't wash this body, how is it after a day or two? Does it smell? Is it nice? Keep studying this and you'll learn, even though at first it's just memory and intellectual, applying the mind in an intellectual way to this practice, it will gradually turn into something deeper, into wisdom. Keep doing this, whether you're here or Wat Mop Chan, whether you're out in one of the branch monasteries, keep practicing in just the same way. Keep learning to make your mind peaceful, keep learning to investigate truth, because this is the way out of samsara, this is the way leading to liberation. Keep learning to be careful and restrained in your behavior, restrained in the patimokkha, restrained in the indriya, the sense faculties, restrained in the use of the four requisites. Learn to have mindfulness with sense contact, and learn how to contemplate that sense contact once having established mindfulness. Learn how to let go of your moods and desires, your liking and disliking. This is the way to liberation, Lumpur Cha taught over and over again. This is the correct way. This is the way that we all come to see the Dhamma.